Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese on Blog Talk Radio. Robert is the author of The Offsite, Leadership Challenge Fable, and the founder of LeaderInsideOut.com.
And welcome once again to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and co-host Mike Neese. This is Monday, February 2, 2015. January is history, so whatever happened in January stays in January. And, of course, this is Robert Thompson coming to you live from the beautiful San Francisco Bay, as we do each and every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And, as always, joining from the shores of good old Lake Michigan, my good friend and co-host, Mike Neese. Mike, how was your weekend?
It was great, Robert. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Super Bowl, did you have any money on New England or Seattle?
No, I took the Detroit Lions.
Oh, you did. Good, good, good. I was hoping the Niners would show up and win as well, but they didn't do that.
They showed a picture of Katy Perry riding the lion in, and in the Detroit Free Press today, and they said, "Finally, a lion sighted at the Super Bowl."
That's awesome. That is great.
That's terrible.
Yeah, you know. I would have loved to have been in Vegas where people were betting on Seattle winning.
Yes.
The guy that caught the ball with his knee, and then they go in and they're on the 1 yard line and they should have gotten a touchdown and won the game and they lost. And then there was the other guy across the room that had bet New England would win, and he was heartbroken thinking this is over, and then it wasn't over. That was one heck of a game.
It was
just amazing finish. It really was. Speaking of great, we've got another good one coming today. We're pleased that Eileen McNard, author of Your Resiliency GPS, is joining us. Our friend Bev Kay says, just the questions Eileen asks in her new book are worth the price. And that's quite a statement. Mm-hmm. Folks, if you have a question or thought to share, please call in at 347-989-0965. That number, once again, 347-989-0965. And, of course, never miss a session by subscribing to Thought Grenades on iTunes. That way, Mike and I are right there on your mobile device. As always, if you're looking for something practical, simple, and effective, this is the place. Eileen, it's good to have you on. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So, resiliency. What
yes.
does that mean? I have a hard time saying it. I can't spell it most of the time. So, talk us through your resiliency GPS. You mentioned at the beginning of the book, you mentioned the dictionary is all wrong, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's pretty provocative. So talk a little bit about that. Why do you think the dictionary is wrong about resiliency?
Well, I think it's fine if we're going to be talking about willow trees and pieces of malleable steel. But when it comes to human beings, I think the dictionary definition, which the very first one is to bounce back, to be able to have tensile strength that when you let it go, it resumes its original form. For me, in our lives as human beings, there is no such thing as going back. You never go back to the same place where you were. You are somehow changed. Where we get in trouble is where we want it to look like the way it used to look, and it won't. So I think a far more powerful way of looking at resilience is to how do I grow through both challenge as well as opportunity. That's the other piece, that the dictionary seems to imply that what happens in resiliency is because there is some negative event. I think resiliency is a life skill, and it is required not only when things are challenging, but also when things are really great. When, for example, when you gentlemen started this whole talk radio, it's going to take a lot of resilience. It's going to take a lot of energy to say, okay, how do we put this thing together? Oh, my gosh, who do we have as guests? How do we grow our audience base? That took resiliency. It was an opportunity. So that's why I think the dictionary is really all wrong.
All right. So talk a little bit about what the word should be. I mean, you coined a new word, right? I mean, presilience?
I did. I coined presilience. That's P-R-E, and then the rest of the word of resilience, which you and I both were laughing about how it still is hard to spell. But it's preemptive resilience. And by preemptive resilience, if you wait until you need to become resilient, you waited too long. In fact, that's what we're seeing now. Actually, cities, organizations are beginning to have positions for resiliency officers. And the point of the resiliency officer is to look at what are some things that could happen and how do we prepare now? How do we become preemptive so that if, in fact, something happens, we have some of our skill base, some of our tools, things that we need that are already in place. So I think resilience gives the human system a lot more power. Let me give you an example. I live in California. We're the earthquake state, right, Mike?
Indeed.
So I know this. Do you think that in all of the years that I've done this, it wasn't until this past month that I finally decided I needed to put together an earthquake kit? Hello, Eileen. That's not being resilient. I can't wait till the walls shake and all of a sudden I have no water. And I actually spent 2 solid weeks doing everything that I needed to do to get my house, my car, my family ready in the event that we have an earthquake. That's not to say, oh, my God, this is negative and terrible, but I want to be resilient. I don't want to be caught by surprise.
Yeah, I was very interested, Eileen, that you mentioned that some businesses have resiliency officers. What kind of things are they tracking to help them determine what they need to be ready for?
Well, unfortunately, it's the after-the-fact response is what you see.
Okay.
A great example, if I can use our own state of California, we're a drought state. This is not a surprise. We've been a drought state forever, but it is only now that California is seriously beginning to look at, oh, my gosh, what do we do if we run out of water? What are the things? We should have been doing this a long time ago. When you look at some of the city officials who are up in the Northeast where Hurricane Sandy hit, now they're beginning to say, oh, my goodness, by the way, this is like the 20th hurricane that has hit that part of the area. Oh, now maybe we really should put some power lines underground. And so they actually are scrambling in many ways to do things that should have been done. For us in our personal lives and in business, when I talk to people who are involved in risk management, I really want them to look at it differently and see it instead of risk management, it's opportunity management. And so it's what do we have as an opportunity here that could make us more competitive, that could make us more profitable, that could engage and hold people, and we see it as an opportunity.
Very good.
So why did you get involved in this? What about this word got you involved in writing a whole book about it? I mean, was there something went on in your life?
Thank you. That is a lovely question. Actually, I started really looking at this whole issue of resiliency when 9/11 occurred. And it was watching myself. It was watching my fellow citizens. It was watching my clients, how we responded in the event of, for us, the worst thing that had ever happened on our shores. And I saw 2 different kinds of responses. I saw kids who were standing at the corner selling lemonade to raise money for the families who had been hurt in 9/11. They were doing something. On the flip side, I saw organizations absolutely freeze, and literally I was told, we are not flying anybody in. The attorneys don't want us to bring anybody in, and everybody's hunkering down. It's like they're hiding underneath their desk and see what happens, whereas the kids were out there saying, what can we do? And I thought, you know, this is really fascinating to me. We've got 2 different ways of responding to an event. And so I wrote one book back then called The Resilient Spirit. So over time, as I'm looking at this issue of resiliency, I also had to deal with my business that goes up and down, as we all have seen it with the economic downturn of 2008. So how do you respond to that? How do you use that as a way of, how do I grow through this? I also was the primary caretaker for my mom for the last 6 years of her life. And in fact, in the book, there is a chapter called Lost is a Place, because I teach what I need to learn. And there is a point in which, in dealing with Mom and subsequently her death and the intimate way in which we needed to care for her, that you suddenly feel lost when it's over. And how do you grow through that? So both professionally and personally are the reasons why I decided, darn it, I talk about this thing, I lecture about this thing, I need to take what's out of my head and what's out of my mouth and put it on paper.
Good for you. You know, that's one of the things that I'm sure Mike can agree with me on, is like as you go out and you talk about leadership, let's say, because that's what we've been doing for the last 100 years, it's tough when you find yourself in a spot and you're not practicing what you preach. It's one of those moments.
It is.
Right?
You know, it slaps you upside the head and you say, so you need to be teacher-learner here. And that's actually how I wrote the book. If you'll notice when you look at the book, it's a very easy to read book, but there's a lot of very specific ideas and questions that are in there. And the reason I use the GPS is that it's a growth potential strategy, which is my emphasis on this notion of growth. And that every time in the book, when you come to the little icon of the GPS, there are recalculating questions. Because I think as we move through life. Sorry?
You talk about the four skills. Go into that a little bit for our listeners. Talk a little bit about
okay.
the four skills.
Okay. In my research and in my experience and in dealing with clients, I think there are four skills that we can constantly grow and develop. The first one, the biggest one, is adaptability. The second one is agility. The third is laughability. And the fourth is alignment. So let me take the first one, adaptability. And everybody says, okay, to be resilient, you got to be adaptable. You have to figure out something else to do. I expand on that notion of adaptability, and I think of it as being requisite variety. Requisite variety is a word that comes from the biological systems, and it basically says that the organism with the greatest number of responses to any given situation is the one that will survive. So in other words, Robert and Mike, if we were playing chess, three-person chess, let's pretend, and you guys knew 27 chess moves and I knew two, who's going to win at chess? You guys are. So adaptability says, how many different ways can I look at this event in my life and find different ways to choose to respond to this event? So adaptability takes many, 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 many forms. But it's that constant looking at what next, and we get so comfortable with, oh, this is the way we've always done it. I mean, that's what we're seeing in our governments, that's what we're seeing in cities. Well, this is how we handle this, you know, this is how it's done. Who says so? Why? Why not? I think for organizations, that's one of the great questions. Why don't we do it this way? Why not try something else? So that's the big piece of adaptability. Agility is about action. It's about movement. It's about how can I turn on a dime? How can I shift? And it's action coupled with wisdom. So it's not a knee-jerk response, but it's saying, okay, what's a step I could take? Not that I have to go 9,000 miles before I turn around and say, oh, maybe this was the wrong direction. I want to begin to take the small steps, because I think action, this is, you can quote me on this one, action is the antidote for anxiety. When I get really anxious, what can I put in motion? That's what I saw with those little kids selling lemonade on the corner at 9/11. These little kids said, oh, dear, what can we do? Their small action was that. Laughability is the fact that laughter is a great perspective tool. And I think laughter lets us get through a ton of things. So I like to look at what's the humor that you can find in this. And alignment, the very last one, is in order for me to stay the course, what is it that I am lined up to? What is it that matters to me in my life? What is the bedrock that I am on? Individuals have bedrock. When we lose the bedrock, we've lost our way. What is it that matters most? And those are the four skills that I think we can grow and learn and carry us through our lives.
That's great, Eileen. I wonder, you know, to be resilient requires, I think, in my mind, to pick yourself up and try again requires a great pool of energy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the relationship between energy and how resilient you can be, and are they connected?
How about one-to-one?
Okay.
It is. In fact, we just put up our new website, and I am the CEO of the Resiliency Group, but CEO stands for Chief Energy Officer.
Okay.
And everything is energy. Everything is energy. Leadership is energy. There's an exchange of energy. If you have a negative connection, you got negative energy going out, you just chase people out the door. Or else you didn't chase them out the door, they're just staying underneath their desk and doing the little bit that they have to. Everything is an energy exchange. So one of my questions, and the recalculating questions, is what are your energy drainers? What are your energy maintainers? So if I know that every time I have to deal with, every time I have to deal with a client who is just so demanding, who just sucks the life out of you, so I have a couple of choices. I can keep that client and say, okay, how will I put the energy back after I deal with them? I can fire the client, which, by the way, I have fired clients before. It doesn't work. It's not a match. You know, life is too short to have to deal with that one. So how do I put the energy back, and how do I recognize those things that take me away? And I think we have a lot more choices than we think we have within our life when it comes to what gives me energy, what depletes energy.
Very good.
No question about it. Talk a little bit more about firing a client. I like that. I've done that myself. What prompted you to fire them, and how did you do it? Did you just call them up and say, I'm not going to work with you anymore, or did you actually look at them and say, you're fired?
Actually, what I did is I said, you know, I don't believe this relationship is working. I don't think I'm going to be able to give you what you want and it will make you happy. So I'm going to suggest some other people that you might like to talk to, and we will terminate this. You know, I'll finish this last assignment, but I think it's best that you go someplace else.
What was the look on your face?
Well, it was done over the phone.
Oh, too bad. Darn.
It was over the phone.
Darn.
It was over the phone. But it wasn't. I mean, not every client is right next to me. You know, we do a lot
sure.
of stuff.
Yeah.
Just like you guys are talking to each other, Michigan and San Francisco. But if you notice, I said, I'm not going to be able to give you what you want and to make you happy. I didn't say, you stink. I didn't say, you drain my energy. I said, I can't give you what it is that's going to make you happy. And I want you to be
like
happy in this, and it's not going to work this way. Because
you're a very
if
nice
you
woman.
Think about it, well, if you think about it, I also believe you also want to leave, you always want to leave relationships well. Like if you resign from a company, I've left a couple of companies, and when I do, I want to make sure that I leave well, because you never know when you might want to come back again.
That's correct. Yeah, I'm sort of kidding you, but it would be lovely. I've had a few clients where it would have been very lovely to eyeball to eyeball and say, you're fired. But yes, I was gentle with it as well on my side. But now let's talk about a client that you worked with and had some great success. Resiliency-wise, what did you do? How do you engage? What was your tactics, your strategy, your vision for the interaction?
That's another lovely question. So if you take the definition that I gave you, that resiliency is growing through challenge or opportunity, and that it's all about energy to grow through, energy comes, again, from connections, from relationships. In this case, The client had just assembled his entire senior level team, and as the client said to me, I've got world class players. They don't know how to play together. So we have a resiliency issue. We have an energy issue. So when I'm presented with something like that, you have to figure out what are the things that are going to give us energy in this group. What are the things that are going to drain the energy? And I always believe you start with the human connection first. So what I do in this case, we had an outcome, what the person who, you know, the senior most person was driving for, what they wanted to achieve. And so I ask all the players the same set of questions. And then I create third-party papers, which literally give back to them a summary of what they said. So it's not Joe said, Mary said, Sam said. It's tremendously time-consuming on my part, but it also makes, when we finally can come together and see each other, a lot more effective because I've taken the first cut at everything. And I present to them what it is that they've said. But before we present that, we do some things that say, who sits around the table? How do we understand who sits around the table? How do we create those connections so that I know something about you, Robert, that's more than what your resume says? It's more than what your title says. Because when I can begin to see and value you as a human being, we have created an energy connection that can help us grow together instead of growing apart. So we always start on that level.
Very good.
That's very cool.
Thank you. It's fun, too. And I'm fun. We got to have fun in it. We got to have fun. This one group, they came from around the world, and I literally, when I interviewed them, I said, I want you to send a picture of to me, a JPEG, of yourself as a, either a teen or a toddler, and then tell me what's your most favorite piece of music, what song that you really identify with, and the third thing, complete the sentence. If I had another life to lead, I would be blank. And through the course of our very intense, almost 3 days together, I would feed that stuff back to them. Only the way I fed it back to them was they had to guess. So I would play, I'd say, you know what, we need a break here. Whose favorite piece of music is this? And all of a sudden you're listening to Inagata De Vida, which is a head song from the 60s, right? Then they're looking around at each other and said, oh my gosh, whose favorite song is that? Well, it was so hysterical. It was the only attorney in the group. And people laugh. The song is Inagata De Vida. It's a head song. Inagata De Vida. But it was the attorney. The only attorney in the group was the one. That was his favorite song. And it gave them another dimension to look at that person with. And when I would put up a picture of somebody as a teen or a toddler, I'd say, who is this? And they look around and go, God, who is that? Who is that?
Sure.
And the reason I ask for either a teen or a toddler is we both have been there.
What was the question that you asked them to do? Say it again.
If you had another life, if I had another life to lead, I would be. And so then throughout the course of the time. Sorry?
Let me ask that question. Let me ask that question to you. If you had another life to live, what would you be?
If I had another life to lead, there's actually five different things I would be, which that's a whole other course for a whole other time. It's how do you help people figure out what draws them. I would probably like to be on Broadway as a singer-comedian, or what else would I like to be? An adventurer, somebody who goes to remote countries and studies them and come back and says, oh, look what they can teach us.
What do you think? What do you think that tells you? What does that tell you about yourself now?
Well, actually, it tells me in many ways that I'm in the right job, because if you think about it, when we go out as consultants, we are really going to a strange new land, and what we have to do is to find out. We're like the anthropologist that's finding. Oh, tell me, who are your high priests and priestesses? What does your culture say? And then how can we present it back to them in a way that is engaging and energizing and fun? And because I do speak for a living, I am on a stage, so I get to have a little bit of that. So, yeah.
And I guess you sang here today. So there you go. You're also a singer, and you
I did. That
and
was
made,
terrible. I never.
That's right. And you made Mike and I. You made Mike and I laugh a little bit. So you're a comedian. So see, you're really doing that. So, one more question. What book in your life? What book changed your life?
Wow. I'm such a reader. That's like saying, which one of your four children do you love the most?
Well, you can answer that one.
No,
you can answer that one if you like.
Not in Keep My Happy Home. Actually, one of the books that, well, there's two, that if I had to go pick something up and just open it up and read it and say, okay, there's my lesson. One would be The Prophet by Gahil Gibran.
Uh-huh.
There's such
good
wisdom in that small book. And the second one is Anne Morrow Lindbergh's book, Gifts from the Sea.
Sure. Yeah, good one.
Because her writing is so, both of them, the writing is so clear. And it is looking at life and events and saying there's more here than what I see. Anne Morrow Lindbergh did it with the seashell. And she looked at the chambered nautilus and said, how is it that my life is divided this way? And I also am a strong believer in the power of metaphor as a teacher. So I think those two books.
Great.
Okay. And I think that some people might, after reading your book, your Resiliency GPS, Eileen, once they read that book, they might find that that book then changes their life as well. And they'll be able to answer that question sometime in the future. So, I think it's a great little book and it's a great guide. You're a great lady. I love your energy because you're the chief energy officer. And it comes through, it comes right on through the radio waves here. The book is Your Resiliency GPS, the author, Eileen McDard. Eileen, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
You're welcome. It was a great
Thanks,
show.
Eileen.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So, Mike, next week, Mike Butler, Chief of Safety for Longmont, Colorado, will join us. And he's going to kick off our first installment of what we're calling Leadership for the Common Good. It's a theme that we're going to be focusing on for the next few months. Mike will share insights around restorative justice. What is it? How did it help Longmont overcome some serious issues in their community? Could restorative justice have helped solve problems in Ferguson and New York City? Restorative justice is the topic we'll tackle next week as we begin this new series that looks at real leaders solving real problems in real time. And we'd really like you folks to join us. Mike, this comes from the challenge we had from Peter Block,
sure,
late last year. And he said he would like us to take the show in a deeper conversation. So we're going to be doing that. We're lining up some what I think are guests that actually do things. They're leaders who are doing things. And some are writing and doing, but many of them are just doing in the community, trying to make a difference. And I'd like Soccer Grenades for you and I to be able to help them highlight what they're doing and all that. So, folks, that's what we're going to be doing. Again, his name is Mike Butler. He's the Chief of Safety for Longmont, Colorado, meaning he's both the Chief of Police and the Fire Chief for Longmont, and he'll be joining us next week to talk about restorative justice. Check in with us next time as we continue to show how you can make a positive difference as you pursue excellence and create your very own masterpiece. Folks, this is Robert Thompson from Mike Neese. Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades for Monday, February 2, 2015.
Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese. Catch us live every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio or listen anytime you wish on iTunes.